Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:52 PM. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 16th. I thought it would kick off today with Amazon. It's up another $100 today, although off its intraday high. The share is up 50% in less than a month, and for a $1 trillion company, that's a lot of money. There are some big questions. The first is, considering the fact that Amazon, until this week, curtailed the most third-party sellers from sending additional inventory because they wanted to free up warehouse space for essential items like food items and personal care products, like things that people would need for either their personal safety or the quarantine environment. And then they've also been devoting an awful lot more time to delivering groceries. Anyone who's tried to secure a delivery window in anything like 24 hours has seen how difficult it is. And then when you look at the success of companies in the private sector like Instacart, where they are trying to hire an additional 300,000 people, then you can see that there's obviously been a lot of demand. But Amazon doesn't make any money from delivering groceries, and I don't think that that's something that the market is taking any particular or paying attention to. Then you have the additional fact that sales of non-essential products have cratered in the course of the last month. I can certainly see that in Mrs. Tracy's business, for example, sales are down in the order of 70%, and that's for an online business. We can only imagine that it's zero sales for any companies that are in fact no longer working at all. I'm just going to cough one sec. So we have a short-term overbought condition. Now, that doesn't mean that the price of Amazon is going to pull back very sharply. The fact is that it ranged for a prolonged period of time. The upper side of the range is probably around the $2,000 level, so it could pull back to $2,000 and still have sustained the breakout. The other point about Amazon is that it has been the buy the dip share over the course of the last decade, and that remains the case. And buying the dips has always worked. So therefore, that was one of the first shares that people went into. Then another share that tends to really grab the attention of investors is American Tower. It owns cell phone towers, and it's also right back in the region of its all-time peak. Now, if we actually look at this over the course of more than a decade, it's been a spectacular performer over the course of the last 20 years, going from about $1 to $250 in the space of 20 years is spectacular by any stretch of the imagination, but it's the dividend growth policy, where they grow dividends by 20% a year, is the thing that gets people to come back on every single pullback. So we certainly have evidence of people buying dips. Visa is another company that has got dividend growth rates in the region of about 20%, but it was in negative territory today, and it is encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. So I think there's evidence we're going to have some additional consolidation. Of course, Visa is a company that is, in many respects, a pipeline company. So they make money off of flow. And the number of transactions has certainly contracted over the course of the last month, and therefore that's probably a headwind for Visa. But at the same time, whenever we see transaction volume starting to pick back up, well, I don't think anyone really questions that they're not going to be able to continue to sustain their dividend. So even here, there is the scope for some consolidation, but we've seen some serious technical deterioration. And when something that has been going up for a prolonged period of time suddenly pulls back in a violent manner and then goes into a more volatile ranging phase, well, one has to question whether there isn't a real peak in here. This is a peak of at least medium-term significance, and we're probably going to see a prolonged period of ranging before the price can recover the $200 handle. And that suggests that it's probably going to be a share that does experience some additional volatility. Now, this is one of the issues. These are among the companies that pay out either very impressive dividends or have some of the most impressive dividend growth, to be more accurate. And then you have Amazon, which has been one of the big beneficiaries of the rebound over the course of the last month. But the bigger picture here is that these are among the strongest of shares. When, for example, then we look at small caps, well, they've pulled back in a very dynamic manner. They haven't rallied by nearly to the same extent. Now, there is a sequence of higher reaction lows so far. They are still unwinding the oversold condition. The big question is, how long is that going to persist? The reality is that the small cap sector in the USA is eerily similar in terms of the chart pattern to that of the Euro stocks. Now, when we then think about the FTSE 250, a mid-cap index in the UK, it's got that same sequence of higher reaction lows that we have on the Russell. So there is the potential that we're going to see some additional unwinding of oversold conditions. But the longer the rebound goes on, there is going to be this continued argument about whether this is a bear market rally or whether the lows are in. And the reality is it could be both. The low might be in, but it doesn't mean that the price is going to go straight back up to the top. And that suggests that even in a recovery scenario, we are still likely to see some pause in consolidation. One of the, I think, interesting points that Albert Edwards is making is that core CPI has pulled back. There is a sharply deflationary aspect to what is going on in the global economy right now. When the IMF talks about the market or the global economy contracting by 3%, then that is certainly suggestive of deflationary forces. And government bond yields have not rallied to nearly the same extent as some of the bigger equities. So there is still potential that we're going to see some additional downward pressure on yields. And that is equally true everywhere. So when we look at, for example, the 10-year gilt, it's also coming back down to test the lows on the yield put in March. If we then just look at Australia, for example, then what we are presented with is a yield that does still have some downward pressure. Now, obviously, there was a sell-off in terms of government bond prices in the middle of March for a number of markets. But since then, they are contracting once more. And all of that flies in the face of the fact that when you've got governments all over the world printing trillions of dollars, euros, pounds, francs, yen, and renminbi, that they have no intention of coming up with a plan to pay back, well, then the natural outlet is going to be inflation. Well, generally speaking, inflationary pressures do tend to support commodity prices, but commodity prices haven't really bounced yet. So I think it is quite likely that we are going to have inflation, but perhaps not immediately. One thing that is helping to support gold more than the other commodities is that it is a monetary asset. And we have negative real interest rates. And I think that is something that is helping to support the price. When we think about the fact that CPI might be in one place, but the interest rates on just about every short-term interest rate in the world is below where CPI is right now, well, then those are negative rates. even when CPI comes down, then interest rates are going to go to zero. And there is the clear intention that they're going to print their way out of problems. Well, I really do think that this is quite similar to the kind of conditions we saw in the early 1970s, where we had monetary financing. And that's very similar to what is being proposed through modern monetary theory. Now, when we look at gold, it is overbought in the short term, so it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we do get some consolidation. We are already seeing some consolidation coming through in markets like silver and platinum. And they are at areas of potential resistance, particularly platinum around the $800 handle. But at least it is steadying. One of the additional factors that is going to put deflationary pressure on the global economy is the oil price. And oil is hovering here around the $28 level on Brent and was below $20 on West Texas Intermediate for part of the day. In fact, closed down there. When we look at Western Canadian Select, then we are getting to a point in Canada where they are close to giving it away at $7 a barrel. So there is still a lot of oil that is sloshing around the world, and it's going to take at least some semblance of economic recovery in order to truly demonstrate that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. One thing that I think is particularly interesting right now is the dollar. We've had some extraordinary volatility over the course of the last few months. It first went down in a big way, then went up in an even bigger way. It's still hovering here around the psychological 100-point level on the dollar index. And we do have the makings of a triangular pattern evolving. Now, generally speaking, when triangular patterns are resolved, where we have sequences of lower rally highs coupled with sequences of higher reaction lows, when the eventual break does occur, it's sustained and it is usually large. Now, we have to think, well, what would be the... I think it's easy to make the bearish argument. There is a wall of money being printed, and the USA is printing more than just about anyone else, so that should be bearish. But the bullish argument is that despite the fact that the USA is printing money at an aggressive rate, the economy in the US is probably still stronger than it is elsewhere. Now, certainly with Europe starting to open up, and Germany is beginning to ease their lockdowns, and Switzerland is coming up with plans to ease their lockdowns, and Italy is doing the same. We're not quite there yet in the UK. We're certainly not there yet in much of the USA. But there are a number of emerging markets haven't introduced lockdowns at all. And I think one of the most important points is there was a lot of complacency about the trajectory of the virus infection rate in tropical countries. There was a number of reports that were circulated back in early February thinking that since the number of cases had only really risen in places like China and Europe, that the emerging markets would be immune. But that was largely ignoring the fact that nobody was testing for it. And it is impossible to compare data across countries. I continue to see arguments that take China's data at face value. I am incredulous that investors and journalists are still willing to do that, or simply the fact that they are all in the pocket of the Chinese administration. To think that China has only had 3,000 deaths from the coronavirus is absolutely ludicrous, when one city like New York has had anything from 7,000 to 10,000. So this is to think that China is anywhere even remotely close having reported the true extent of the outbreak there is just beyond belief that people are willing to take that at face value. But the bigger picture here is that the problem is probably going to get worse in emerging markets before it gets better. So when we then look at currencies, the South African rand did steady, but now it's weakening again, and it is back in the region of this 19 handle. Now, if this is an important low, well, then 19 is going to hold. When we look at the Brazilian real, then it's right in the region of its lows. And the big question is this a peak or is it a consolidation? And the Indian rupee, and India has been in a lockdown for the last few weeks. Well, Indian rupee is breaking on the downside. Now, international investors like to have the currency, the stock market, and the yield on their side. Well, when, for example, we look at India, there is no question that value is returning and that the Nifty has at least stabilized. But it hasn't stabilized by a lot, considering that it pulled back from 12,000 to below 8,000. It's only back to 9,000. It has not rallied back to 11,000, for example, like the S&P 500. And the currency is going down. So when we look at a US dollar ETF, then the rally has been modest. When we look at a UK investment trust, then also the rally has been modest because of the currency differentials. Well, I think it's easy to predict that emerging markets are going to recover, that they are where there are clear value opportunities. The valuation was trading at reasonable levels compared to Wall Street ahead of this crisis. They're trading at significantly wider discounts right now, but we are not at the crest of the infection rate in emerging markets yet, and it's not until we get there and have got some sort of evidence that we can rely on that they are past the worst of it that value is going to be realized in some of these markets. So we've had an important rebound. There is the clear potential we're going to have some consolidation. For the weaker markets, whether that is small caps, mid caps, Europe, or emerging markets, we're likely to see potentially some of these markets go to new lows. The fact that banking sectors are so weak, that should be given, I think, some credence that the loan loss provisions that are being announced by various banks in the US right now are likely to be followed by bigger loan loss provisions in a number of other countries. UK banks also remain weak and in fact have not been able to rally back above the lows put in March. The European banking sector has been highly flattered over the years by a number of its constituents leaving through bankruptcy or nationalizations, and it's likely that a number of additional banks are going to go bust or be nationalized. So European banks continue to trend downwards. When we think about Japan, the Topix Banks Index remains under pressure. The second section has been a clear lead indicator for the wider market for a long time, but its rally so far has been modest, to say the least. Now, when we then think about valuations, well, certainly a PE of 9 is certainly not challenging. And the dividend yield of 1.8% is reasonable from a Japanese perspective. But the big question is, where's the growth going to come from for an export-oriented market like Japan when the global economy is contracting? It suggests that we're going to be in for some additional volatility. Now, thinking of volatility, the VIX index has continued to contract. It's been trending downwards now for most of the last month. Peaks in the VIX are much better indicators of lows than troughs are of peaks. And it is likely, I think, that the lows for the major indices are in. I don't think it's too early to make that determination for a number of the weaker markets. There's been a massive differentiation between the large cap sectors that are flush with cash, and like the FANGs, compared to the smaller caps. So there is also the incredible performance of shares like Tesla, which is up now to nearly $750. So a really very spectacular advance over the course of a very short period of time. I certainly think that the future of cars is going to be electric. And there was news today that General Motors is developing a battery that has got 400 miles of range and can be and the car will be able to go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. And obviously that has not helped to support the share to nearly the same extent that Tesla has. The fact is that a number of the legacy automotive makers have got a massive headwind in terms of all of the established plant that they have, which is basically obsolete now, and they have to start from zero. That is something that is going to weigh on the sector for the foreseeable future, and that is the space into which Tesla is continuing to move. But Tesla is a triple C rated credit, so despite the fact that it is the lightning rod for liquidity and speculative interest, it still has yet to prove that it can deliver a reliable profit. Now, when we think about what is going on in China, their production of steel continues to improve. They are trying to get the domestic economy back on track. The stock market is no longer reflective of anything to do with the economy. And the renminbi remains under pressure. And it does look like this break below 7 is going to be sustained, and that we're likely to see the renminbi continuing to weaken. The Chinese definitely want a weaker currency to reignite their export markets. So it is very tempting to think that the dollar is going to decline from here, but the question is against what? There is no country is willing to tolerate a strong currency. And certainly they all need a weaker currency. And they're all printing. That's one of the reasons why gold continues to catch a bid, because it is the benchmark against which all fiat currencies are measured. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.